I know, I pressed stop by accident. Today we're going to, here we are. Today we're going to discuss the two separate but and unrelated topics, the beginning of Parashat Tetzaveh, most of which I call from Nechama Leibowitz, who is excellent on this week's Parasha. She's excellent on every Parasha. So, but she hits a couple of the main themes that I think are important. And being that it's Tetzaveh, and I didn't get away with Truma and Tetzaveh together, you know, you need help. So we'll take it that way. I'll start by sharing with you.
Already in Tetzaveh, you're having a hard time. What's going to happen when you get to Vayakha Pagudah?
What I used to do was do Megillat Esther. Okay, wow, Purim's coming up.
We don't have that this year.
No, it's a big trouble. So I'd like to point out, this is one of my favorite fleeces, and not just because it's a very comfortable fleece, but because it came from the Joseph B. Soloveitchik Institute. And not a week goes by when somebody doesn't see this jacket and make a comment on it and say, oh, what is that? And I say this by means of introduction because today we're going to talk about clothing and Big Day Kahuna and what the purpose of Big Day Kahuna were, as it's described in the Torah. And in addition to that, then obviously the Big Day Kahuna have implications not just for Aharon and the Kohanim who wore them, but they say a lot about us as well and about clothing in general. And I think it's a good opportunity to talk about clothing because it's something that's central to our lives, but we almost never really, we don't focus on their meaning in the way that we could or that we should. Okay, so first we're going to start talking about a different subject, and then we'll get from there to the topic of clothing. We're on Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Kaf. Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Kaf. Okay, just as a short introduction, the last parsha ended up with the construction of the Mishkan, right? And ended up like the Chatzer. Like God said, make the Chatzer and have this many stands and this many poles and that many Chatzer had canvases, but it was really like animal skins running across. Okay, fine. And then the subject completely turns. Ve'ata, and you, Tetzaved B'nei Yisrael. Man, the Jewish people, b'kchu elach Hashem in zayit zach katit la ma'or la'alok ner tamid. And they should b'kchu elach, they should take to you shemen zayit, olive oil, zach, pure olive oil, katit, crushed, la ma'or, to be used for lighting, la'alok ner tamid, to raise up a ner tamid. Ner tamid, obviously, where?
In the Beit HaMikdash.
In the Mishkan, on what?
Menorah.
But oh,
what do you mean on the menorah?
In the menorah.
One of the lights were called a ner tamid?
Apparently, yes, that the lights of the lamp were ner tamid.
This is for the... No, but it already talked about the menorah in Terumah.
And we're saying it again. But oh, moed michutz la parochet, right. But oh, moed michutz la parochet, in the oh, moed, outside the parochet, asher al ha'edut, that covers over the edut, which is the testimony, which is what? The luchot. Yaruch oto Aharon ubanav me'erev ad boker lifnei Hashem.
I think it's something different than the menorah. I don't think it's the menorah.
Really? You don't think the menorah should be lit every night by Aharon?
I do think it is, but I think that the ner tamid is something different.
You think there was another? Where was it lit?
I don't know.
And on what was it lit?
I don't know. Or maybe
one of the lamps was a ner tamid?
Yeah.
Like the shamash?
Something.
But there
like
wasn't
that.
A shamash on the menorah.
Whatever.
One of them.
They say that I heard that one of them was always. They used to lit them every day. But
right.
One of them never.
Yeah, one was a ner tamid. Yeah. It wasn't the whole menorah.
Rashi says ner tamid, kol laila, all night, not all the time. You don't like that?
It doesn't.
Okay. This isn't our discussion. Okay, because I don't want to. Right, that's okay. Yeah, aruchos aruna baravir aruchu d'fnei Hashem chukat olam devarotechem beit bnei Yisrael. It's an eternal law. From the Bnei Yisrael. I would just point out, this whole section seems out of place. I mean, I kind of pointed that out. Right? What in the world is the lighting of the menorah doing here after the Chatzer, after the description of the Chatzer, and before, now we're going to turn to the Big Day Kahuna. But that's not our topic for discussion. I just want to point out that's an interesting topic to explore in and of itself, the placement of this section. What's before?
No, when it's... Who divided the parshiot by parsha?
God.
By parsha?
Oh, the parsha of Shavua.
Yeah.
The parsha of Shavua we're going to get to in a second. Okay, because let's just read one more pasuk.
No, meaning
the Ner Tamid, the Sifri and the Torah's Kohanim say that it was the Western lamp
in the menorah
was continuously, like was lit continuously.
One of the lamps of the menorah was always continuously lit. Yeah. Okay, okay. Right, and the question then becomes, so then, it's also interesting, is the Ner Tamid we have in our shuls, is that the Ner Tamid for this Ner Tamid? Some say it's also because the Mizbeach was also had to be constantly lit. Okay, so just there are associations between the shul and between the Mishkan. Very nice. I'm pointing out, this section doesn't really fit. It doesn't really belong. But it's there anyway. Serena asked, what about the Parsha? We'll get to that in a second. Because I'm going to get to that question.
It belongs in the previous section, that's what I'm saying.
It belongs in the previous section?
We're
not. No, because it doesn't belong at all. Because the previous section was discussing the construction of the Mishkan. Okay. Mishkan. The construction of the Kelim. Nothing about the Avodah. Right? The Avodah is totally later. And here all of a sudden, it would make sense when you finish the construction of the Mishkan, then you go to the construction of the Begadim. I get that. The whole thing, this is much more of a, I would say, an in-depth shiur about the order of all the parts and where they go. I just pointed out, because if somebody were to give a shiur about that topic, it might be interesting. Okay. Next pasuk. Perak kaf chet, pasuk aleph. Ve'ata, hakrev eilech et aron achicha bet banav ito, mitoch b'nei Yisrael l'chahanoli. And you, bring close to you Aaron, your brother, and his children with him, from the midst of the Bnei Israel to be a Kohen for me. Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, Itamar, Bnei Aaron. Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, Itamar, the sons Aaron. Okay? We'll read a little bit more and then we'll go back. Ve'asita bigde kodesh le'aron achicha, le'chavod u'letifaret. And you should make clothing, we'll translate it carefully, of Aaron, clothing of holiness for Aaron, your brother, le'chavod, for honor, ulatifaret and glory. Pasuk Yemal as the Mustav ve'ata tedaber al kol chachmele v'asher miletiv ruach chachma, and you should speak to all the chachmele, wise of heart, who were filled with the spirit of wisdom. Ve'asu et bigdei Aaron lekadsho lechahanoli, and they should make the clothing of Aaron to sanctify him to be a kohen for me lechahanoli. Okay, so if you're looking at the text. Three times over the course of probably six or seven psukim, a certain phenomenon appears that pretty much all of the mefarshim pick up on. Did you pick up on it? With something that's interesting textually.
Kahanoli.
Kahanoli, okay. It does say it one second. Even from the beginning, though. The kahanoli. Very good. I didn't even notice the kahanoli. Okay. The kahanoli is once. Two. Twice. You see it twice. L'chanoli. But even more interesting, v'ata. More interesting is and unusual is the word v'ata. Right? Meaning when God, who's God talking to?
Moshe.
Usually, when these kinds of things appear, what does the Torah say? How does it introduce the section? Yeah, exactly right. By the Be'er Hashem and Moshe Limor, Tzavet, Tzavet B'nei Yisrael, V'ikhu Elecha Hashem and Zayitzach. Right, actually, that sounds very familiar. You know why it sounds very familiar?
Parshat.
Right, it is the beginning of. One second. Parshat Tzav. Vayikra. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'emor. Tzav et Aaron v'donav l'emor. Zo Torah ta'ola. Tzav et b'nei Yisrael v'amarta alehem et korbani lachmi. Tzav, tzav, tzav. Here, what does it say? Ve'ata tetzaveh et kol b'nei Yisrael. And then we look further. Pasper kafchet. Ve'ata hakrev eilecha et Aaron achicha. And then we look further, the next pasuk, what does it say? Two pasukim after? Ve'ata tedaber l'kol chachmele. We have two questions, two very interesting questions. How does it sound? Meaning, when you read it objectively, when you're just reading the words, how does it sound, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to Moshe?
Like it's his responsibility, like you are... You have to do it, like you have to tell them.
Oh, great. So the question is it more direct than the normal discussion or less direct?
More personal.
Okay? More direct.
It's kind of like saying a little bit, perhaps, hey you.
So you're saying
hey
less
you
direct,
less
personal, you, as opposed to?
Moshe,
you know, but God spoke to Moshe saying. So it's so interesting. I now have two sides of a coin, both of them. Okay? Anybody else want to chime in? Well, I've got both sides. So What do you think? More or less, Ata and you. How does it sound like, and you should, and I want you to do this, and,
like he's
and
the only
you,
one that could do that.
You do this.
Personal, but with an emotion attached with Hashem.
What's that?
Well, sometimes, like when you're talking to someone in your family, you can say you because you're trying to give over an emotion or an intention.
Okay.
You want them to read into it more than just what you're saying. Okay.
So you,
it's Hashem, so.
So you are reading into it. That's so interesting because you are reading into it something deeper, something more close. What?
Because
you're women, right? So. I know that's probably true. All the men who are parshanim, I mean, how do they read into it? They read into it totally differently. Okay, and they also noted, this goes back to Rina's question, who divided up the parshiot? And when did the parshiot become divided up? So really, this is something
that's... No, the parshiot HaShavua.
Yeah, parshiot HaShavua. Right, when did they become... I know what you mean. We're reading parshiot Tetzaveh.
Right.
Who divided it up? So it's quite clear from the Gemara that we used to be on a triannual cycle. Triennial cycle, which means they didn't read the whole Torah every year. They only read the Torah once every 3 years. So, who's to say that you have to go through the whole Torah every year? And for whatever reason, Chazal decided that they were going to break it up and divide it into 52 pieces. Just FYI, the conservative movement wanted to go back to the original Talmudic, whatever, they felt the Torah reading was too long. They might be right.
Shorten their services.
What?
Short. I was going to say, they didn't want to go back to original Talmudic. They
well,
wanted to shorten their services.
That isn't the worst thing they've ever done. You know what I'm saying? they've done other things, but there is a precedent. So it's interesting to know that rabbinically, there is a notion of these parshiot that we have. They're not like halacha the Moshe Sinai, that we have parshiot Tetzaveh. Nowadays, it's interesting that every Jew, all Jews all, everywhere, follow the same parshiot, which is unusual. It could very well be. You would think that, you know,
the
Temanim read, you know, from here to there, and so what that tells you is that it's so far back that it's pre-Golai, but it's pre-Galut. You know, it's got to be way far back there, so that everybody has on the same cycle. But what's interesting is Chazal pick up something very interesting, and they see it as almost divine. They say, why is, if you look at this entire parsha, it's Parsha Tetzaveh, the name of Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't appear once. What? Moshe does appear in the Haggadah. Vayu Ram, Vayaminu Bashem, and Moshe Avdo. It's... No? Doesn't he? Yeah, it does appear in the Haggadah. Once or twice it does appear. Okay, but what do you mean? So, what do you mean that Moshe doesn't appear in the Haggadah? What's the point of Moshe not appearing in the Haggadah?
So we know that it's Hashem.
Correct. Right. So what would you say here? Why? So then, obviously, if there's a whole parsha, Chazal wants to know, as meaningful as that is, why is Moshe Rabbeinu's name not appear in an entire parsha?
It's not just that it doesn't appear.
And very good,
right.
In my
opinion, it's glaringly absent.
Correct, that's exactly
the
point.
V'ata is kind of begging the question.
Right, meaning when Moshe is addressed as, hey, you, and you do this, and you do that, so the Moshe's name is sort of removed from the parsha.
It's like Hashem is intentionally not using his name.
Right, you know, like when you're so mad at your kid and you can't remember their name, say you.
I just call them everybody's name.
Like, you just start cycling through names until you get the right one, right?
Okay.
So Chazal picked up on that. So I'll read you first that Tricanium. There's a number of different opinions as to why Moshe Rabbeinu's name does not appear. The most prominent one isn't that Tricanium, it's in Baal HaTurim, okay, which is basically a paraphrase of the Midrash later on. Lo yizkir b'Moshe b'zeh seder. Do you have the Baal HaTurim? No, in the Midrash on the Pesukim later on. Okay?
In which one?
You see a Baal HaTurim on Chaf? V'atat Tetzaveh? The beginning of the Parsha. The very beginning of the Parsha. If you have the Baal HaTurim. Okay, so the Baal HaTurim says the following. Lo yizkir Moshe b'zeh seder. Moshe was not mentioned in this seder, in this Parsha. From his birth until the end of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu appears in every single parsha except this one. Why? From the moment that Moshe is born, there is no Seder, i.e., Parshat HaShavua, in which Moshe is not mentioned. You find it? Okay, good. V'hatam, and the reason is, Mishum She'amar, because Moshe said, erase me from the book that you have written. When did Moshe Rabbeinu say, erase me from the book that you have written? Right. Here. Later on. It's important to see it, okay? When the Bnei Israel... Okay. One second. It's in Perek... What? Lamed Bet. Pasuk Lamed Bet. Thank you. Okay? We'll go back. If you're interested, you can turn, hold your place here. Turn to Perek Lamed Bet. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. I know, Al. Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Chapter 32, verse 31. The Jewish people made an Egel HaZahav. They made a golden calf. Okay?
God wanted to kill them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's very distracting, cell phones.
I know.
Yes. Vayashav Moshe al Hashem vayomar. Moshe returns to God and he says, Ana, please. Chata ha'am hazeh chata'a gdola. V'yasu lahem Elohei Zahav. This nation has done a terrible sin and they've made a god of gold. V'ata, and now. Im tisa chatatam. If you overlook, accept their sin, if you overlook their sin, then what? What?
And don't kill them.
Well, he didn't say anything. Im tisa chatatam, v'im ayin, and if not, mecheni na misifrecha asher katavta. Do me a favor, please erase me from the book that you have written. What is meaning? God came to Moshe and said, these Jewish people have been so bad, I want to destroy them. You know what? I don't need them. You and me, Moshe. I don't need them. I could build a whole Jewish people just from you. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to the Jewish people, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and says, yes. They did build an Egel HaZahav, but I'll tell you what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have two choices. You can either forgive them, or you can destroy us all. Because I'm not interested in rebuilding the Jewish people just from me. You're not helping. Okay. Yeah, she's busy. Okay, she had a good breakfast. Okay. So it's almost like, how shall we say this? Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to you and says, you're okay, everybody else is bad, I want to destroy them and start over with you. And now you come to God and say, that plan that you had won't work for me. And if you destroy them, kill me too. How does that sound?
As a member of the Jewish people?
You appreciate that when he said that. Right. On the one hand, it's incredible, a display of incredible leadership. On the other hand,
it's incredibly
chutzpah. It's incredible call. Yeah, you're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he had a plan, and you're coming and saying, you know, Ribono Shel Olam, your plan is all nice and good, but it doesn't work for me. I'm not going along with your plan.
But we've heard that before. Like Abraham did the same thing.
Abraham asked God to forgive, to change his mind, to forgive Sodom and Amorah.
Right.
He did ask. Ulai, maybe, please God. You know what I'm saying? And the whole couch in the language of Abraham is, maybe there are 50, maybe 45. I really am sorry. Would you mind checking for 35? And maybe there's 30. Like, it's all very apologetic. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to him and says, Ve'ata im tisar chatatam. And if not, Mecheninam, please erase me from your book. It's almost like the tone of that. Please erase me from your book. Yes, we see for the book that you have written. I.e., this Torah thing. No, thanks.
Yeah, why isn't it Torah Sfa?
Well, Sifrachash from the book that you have written. And so, come to that, let's turn back now. So the Midrash on that Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu, because of Chutzpah, says the following. The Midrash says, I'm sorry, V'ata mishu mecheni na misifcha acher asher chatavta, v'kilalat chacham afilu al tenai ba. The curse of the chacham, even if it's made on condition, it's still fulfilled. We see that in another place as well.
Yeah, with Rachel.
Very good. Rachel in the Trafim, she says,
Well, Yaakov's...
What did she say? She said, Yaakov said,
if there's anyone who's got trafim.
Right. He says, whoever's trafim should die. And he didn't mean her, of course, because he didn't think that she stole it. Very good. What does it mean here, but in this context of kilalat chacham? Wait one second. Afilu al tenai ba. So So therefore, how is the Gemara alluding to Moshe Rabbeinu's behavior in that context? Did Moshe Rabbeinu, in saving the Jewish people, act appropriately?
No.
What's he supposed to do then?
Act inappropriately.
What?
He's supposed to act inappropriately.
And?
And take the consequences.
It's so interesting. Right. Did he act appropriately? No, he did not. Should he have done anything different?
No.
You know, sometimes you find yourself in an impossible situation where there is no good choice. And the choice you have to make is one for which you're going to suffer.
Right.
And so Moshe Rabbeinu makes that choice, and he suffers. But it was still the right choice. You know, there's not always an opportunity. And it's not always a time where you can make the right choice and the things you want to happen are going to happen. It seems almost unfair, but that's the reality of life. It's a very personally meaningful kind of thing. What?
Why specifically here does his name get taken away?
Okay, there's Pshat and there's Drash. This is I want to share with you a very, very important, very, very well-known Drash. Okay? So what's the Pshat reason, by the way, why Moshe doesn't appear?
Because of what he said.
You know, I have an answer, maybe, because the Midrash, Miriam's right, like the Midrash... It would attribute, I would imagine, something specific to this specific parsha. I don't know if there's an explicit midrash that talks about it, why his name was taken from this specific parsha.
Right.
But it kind of, the fact that his name doesn't appear here highlights that the Kohen Gadola was taken from him as well.
Excellent. We're going to get to that in a second.
He said way back because of his original chutzpah to Hashem of, I can't go to Midrash.
Terrific. Okay. And we're going to get to that in a second. That was my next point, but thank you. I appreciate that. So why in this context? In the clearly Pshat, the Datz Kenyan says the next thing. Va'od, dizu ha-parasha medaberet betachsisei kehuna. Right? This parasha deals with kehuna, the clothing of kehuna. U'moshe ha'ita ha-kehuna ha-gdola latzeit. Who was supposed to be the Kohen Gadol?
Moshe.
How do we know that?
He's supposed to be everything.
Okay. Meaning Chazal assumed that since Moshe was the best at everything, he obviously was also supposed to be the Kohen Gadol. Ela, al yedei shesirev lalech b'shlichut hamakom. Since Moshe refused to take the responsibility of going and being the shaliach, the messenger of God in Egypt, natla mimenu, it was taken from him, v'natna la'aron, it was given to Aaron. The fikach, therefore, lo nizkar shel Moshe b'parsha zo, Mipnei agmat nafsho. Why was Moshe not mentioned here? Because it was painful for him. Every time, it's hard, I understand, right? Every time Moshe Rabbeinu had to like fit Aaron and take Aaron and give the kuhuna to Aaron, he thought to himself, it was painful for him. I would love to do that. Not that he's jealous of Aaron, but that he wanted to be the Kohen Gadol. He wanted to be the person who brought the kapara to the Bnei Israel. So it's just a very, very interesting perspective that both Baalei Turim, both commentaries, see the absence of Moshe as something that really he should have had, should have been, but wasn't for whatever reason. You guys didn't see it that way. How did you see it? Let me get to Nechama. How did you see it?
It was personal.
It was much yeah. Right, it was much more... Okay, much more personal, much more individual. Now, I think, in my understanding, the pshat is, like, Moshe Rabbeinu is absent because it's talking about, this is the parsha of the kahuna. And I think that it's not clear, the Midrash always says that Moshe should have been the Kohen. But in reality, like, you see a lot of themes, the role of the Kohen and the role of Moshe Rabbeinu are very different. What's the role of the Kohen?
Forgiveness.
Right. Meaning, the role of the Kohen is to bring you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's to really bring you, draw you nearer to Hashem. What's the role of the Rav? What does a Rav do? Moshe Rabbeinu. What? Why do you say that? What the word Rav has two connotations in Hebrew. What's Rav? It's we learn think of it. My Rav, my Rebbe, my teacher. What's a Rav? There's another meaning of the word Rav. Master in the context of. Who is? There's Rav Talmid, right? The student and his Rav. And then there's Rav, what's the other relationship? Master and? Yeah,
servant.
Nu. Right?
Servant.
Eved. Correct. Okay. So Moshe, a Rav, in a very real way, his job is to is to beat down on his people. Yes, he teaches them, but he's supposed to be harsh with them. He's supposed to be tough with them. He's supposed to, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do when the Egel came? It wasn't like, oh yeah, you guys, I understand, I sympathize with you, let's get forgiveness. He came down on them. And then what did he say? Then when he came down from Har Sinai, right, he called the Levium to him and he said, we have to root out this evil. And they killed thousands of people on Moshe's command. Aaron didn't do that. That's not his role. So in a real way, it's very difficult to say that the Rav and the Kohen Gadol are supposed to be the same person. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, the Rav is the person who's supposed to tell you how it's supposed to be. Like, nowadays, the roles, to some degree, are very much mixed up. You know what I'm saying? We want our Rav to make us feel good. We want our Rav to inspire us. We want our Rav to draw us closer. We don't really resonate with Rabbanim who are tough and harsh. I would say that changed probably because of American society. Like, from what I understand, when I grew up, I had a Rav, my Rebbe, who passed away last year, his name was Rabbi Einemer. When we were in high school, you wanted to get into his shiur, even though you knew he was going to yell at you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a thing. You didn't just get to be in his shiur, you had to deserve it. You had to be on a certain level. Most guys got in, but it was like a thing to aspire to. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm laughing because, I know Rabbi Einemer also from Maryland, but I don't remember him as the yell. Like,
you don't remember him? You don't remember being afraid of him?
I just remember him giving sermons in shul.
What kind of sermons?
Very warm and accepting. And that's
really? And that wasn't the picture we had of him at all.
But no, he was an older man in some ways. So maybe it's just sort of when I came in.
Could be.
I just didn't have that image.
Oh, he was fire and brimstone for many years. He was,
It's funny you say that, because I don't know how it's here in Israel, but in Brazil, you see like this Ashkenazim, they want their Rav to like be there and be a nice
guy.
Bring Spartan,
that's right.
They have this Rav and he tells them, you're going to go, this is going to happen to you, and he screams at them and they love him.
Correct.
they
want it.
They want it.
Correct.
He's mamash like this Rav that screams at his
Correct. I think, by the way, I think there's a lot of that dichotomy explains why we Anglos struggle so much with Rabbanim here in Israel. Because many Rabbanim...
That's why Ashkenazim don't respect so much the Rabbanim. Fortunately, I think. Especially here in Israel, I feel
right, the Rabbanim are a Sephardic model.
The
Rabbanim struggle with us. They don't know what to do with us. They have no idea what to do with us because they don't have to explain themselves to us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? In America, like as a rabbi of a shul, you couldn't just say, this is what we're doing. What do you mean, this is what we're doing? You would have to, politic the congregation and discuss it with them and make a recommendation, send out a nice letter and give a sermon about it once or twice. And then if everything went well, they would all sort of see your side and let you do what you wanted. You know what I'm saying? And in Israel, this is what we're doing. Why? Because I'm the rab. And that's my job, to tell you what we're doing. And then we don't know how to deal with it, and they don't know how to deal with it. But it's a different... Moshe, to be the Moshe, that was Moshe's job. Tzav et b'nei Yisrael. Tell them this is what they have to do. And if they don't do it right, yell at them. You know what I'm saying? And give them a hard time and tell them how it has to be. And for a large... If you look at Moshe Rabbeinu, he was that figure. He was at a distance. He was removed from the people. And to the point where eventually he was physically removed from the people. He was the Rav, Moshe Rabbeinu. He was our teacher. As opposed to Aaron, what's Aaron's job? Hev Shalom, bro. Dave Shalom. His job is to take the person, really, his main job is to take the person who sinned and to take the person who failed and to bring them back closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that job stems from, not from the Rav perspective, but from a perspective of Ahava, of compassion and understanding. And so, aside from all the commentary about Moshe Rabbeinu, like he's being punished here, I think that's a very interesting midrashic lesson. I always saw the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu, his name doesn't appear in this parsha is because he doesn't belong here. It's not his job. And you can't mix the two. You cannot have Moshe Rabbeinu also be the Kohen Gadol. Because the mission of these two people are so separate that to mix the two would confuse the matter and make each one ineffective. And we need both. We need somebody to tell us what to do. And truth be told, I think, like us Ashkenazim, I know you're maybe Sephardi, us Ashkenazim, sort of in the middle, right? Us Ashkenazim, we suffer from the fact that we lack a level of respect and deference. We don't have it. We weren't raised in it. And I think more, it's American. I don't think it's Ashkenazi. I think it's American and Western.
Like in Eastern Europe, what's it like?
Less so. It's cultural.
Right. It's cultural, sure.
It's very much cultural. I mean, you come from a culture of democracy, and then the first question you come from is, if the whole culture is everyone's equal, who are you to tell me what to do?
What about more Haredim?
Yeah.
Is that more, like,
yeah, remember, Haredim reject Western culture.
Definitely more.
They overtly reject all values of Western culture. To what degree it seeps in, you know, that's another argument. It's a discussion. But they reject this notion of course, they accept the idea of Das Torah. The Rav tells me what to do, and I do it. Unquestionably. You know, and we don't have that. And there's some benefits to that you don't just, you can't just, you have to have personal input also. You have to have, you know, a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. You can't just go through the Rav. But we're lacking that level of authority. So that's the way I always understood this Ve'ata. This is a parsha of Kihuna. And Moshe, you Ve'ata Tetzaveh, you're commanding, yes, you are instructing, you are bringing close, but it's really Aaron's job. Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, Vitamar, Vene Aaron. Shh. You're getting tired? Yeah? Ema's going to come down in a second. Okay. Okay. Let's skip to 1 second. So that was, I read, did we do that midrash? 1 second. So, and this is based on the midrash. The Baal HaTurim that I quoted you is based on the midrash that appears also. Okay, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, really, I should destroy you from my book, but I'm not going to destroy you from my book. Rather, I will. I'll pick her up. Let's see if she cries. You haven't done this before? Let's see how it goes. Okay. Let's go back to Perek Chavchet. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Perek Chavchet. Ve'ata akrev elecha et Aaron achicha ve'pana bito mitoch b'nei Yisrael lecha hanoli. And you, bring close to you Aaron, your brother, and his children. Aaron adav v'avihu elazav b'tamar b'nei Aaron. So the Mepharshim, okay, go off on this very simple, on this exact question. Okay, why does it say ve'ata? Okay. And what does it mean? Why was Moshe Rabbeinu? They asked specifically this question. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu not chosen? So I gave my answer. But another question you'd have to ask yourself is, why was Aaron chosen? Right? Why was Aaron specifically brought as the Kohen Gadol? Because, in reality, what might one think, especially in historical context, one might think that Aaron is the last person you would choose as a Kohen Gadol.
It's part of the ego.
Correct. Very good. Okay. So why would you think his Aaron, in the historical context?
He is the perfect context. One because he sins and he did tshuva.
Very good. I totally agree. Let me read you the midrash. Ma'ara Kadosh Baruch Hu shigadil Aaron uvanav lekadesh otam. Why did a Kadosh Baruch Hu choose Aaron and his sons? Amru. So the rabbi said, v'sha'ah shi'arad Moshe mi-Sinai. Okay. When Bnei Yisrael came down from Har Sinai. And Moshe Rabbeinu saw, what did he see when he first came down? He saw Bnei Israel, and who made the egel?
Aaron.
Aaron made the egel. Remember, it's not that Aaron was complicit. It wasn't that Aaron was, you know, like, was a bystander. Aaron made the egel. That's very, very harsh. Okay? He beat Aaron. He was looking at Aaron. Aaron is like banging with a hammer.
Who's banging?
Aaron. Meaning, he comes down, and like in the eyes of the Midrash, Moshe Rabbeinu finds Aaron doing what?
Putting the finishing touches
on the Egel HaZahav. Moshe, you're here. You know, like, Savur haya Moshe shaya Aaron shutaf imahem. So Moshe thought that Aaron was a shutaf, was a partner. V'haya bilibo alav, and Moshe was extremely upset about on against Aaron. Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, God, Moshe, yodea ani kavanato shel Aaron, heach hayta letova. So Midrash says, I know what Aaron's intentions were, and that his intentions were for good. So the Midrash also struggles with this question. Aaron built the egel on the pshat. Why does Aaron, first of all, why does he survive? And secondly, why does he get to be Kohen Gadol? So the Midrash says, and it's something that I struggle with, this answer. The Midrash says that Aaron, the whole reason he did everything that he did was why? Why did Aaron do the whole egel azahav? To stall. So he's stalling and stalling and stalling and stalling, and finally couldn't stall them any longer. That Aaron's intentions were all for the good. I mean, and that answer never really helped me that much. It didn't do much for me. Reason being, because even if your intentions are for the good, if at the end you build an idol on Har Sinai, you know, it doesn't really look so good. Nonetheless, Aaron became Kohen Gadol. So Miriam, what were you saying? I think I totally agree with you.
That the people, Bnei Yisrael, can relate to someone that have also sinned.
Right. Correct. You know. I believe that Aaron HaKohen wasn't the worst choice because of the Chet HaEgel. I believe he was the best choice because of the Chet HaEgel. Because, if remember, what's the job of the Kohen? The Kohen's job is to bring kapara to Jewish people, to show the Bnei Yisrael, like, we're all, like, Moshe Rabbeinu's his job was to show us what it means to be perfect. The ideal. And we all have Rabbanim that are good at that. Unfortunately, none of us are like that Rav. We all fall short. You ever had a teacher like that, like, you know, just knows everything, and it's almost, it's good to see in a sense. What? He himself wasn't perfect with God, but Klape, everybody else, he was Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes, he sinned. He was so good that we don't even know entirely what his sin was. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he sinned with the, he hit the rock. Really? You know what I'm saying? That was it, you know? Okay. On the other hand, we're not that. So you imagine, let's say you failed terribly, a person, you know, we all know what our failings are, what our failing characteristics are. So a person fails in such a way that he becomes a tsarua. He is haughty, he is gaudy, he is whatever, he refuses to give to other people, he blasphemes God. Pick your thing. Doesn't matter what it is. And now he has to try to come back to God. Now remember, the Kohen, it's not like today where it's just you and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You had to go to the Beis HaMikdash, you had to announce your sin, you had to bring a korban. It was a process. It's an incredibly embarrassing, difficult process. So along comes the Kohen and he says to you, Aaron HaKohen comes to you and says, you think you have it bad? Right? You know what I'm saying? He didn't even have to say it. Because it was well known that he's living with the guilt and the anguish of knowing that he caused perhaps the worst sin in Jewish history. And he carried that around with him for the rest of his life. What better agent of kapara could there be for the Jewish people than Aaron HaKohen? You know, and I think there's a lot to say about that, about people being agents of improvement who come from experience, and that speaks to us. And sometimes I think we try to hide our experiences and paint them over, as opposed to using them in order to strengthen ourselves. So I think that there's a lot of that in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Okay, one second. Hakrev elechat Aaron achicha bet banavito mitoch bnei Yisrael lachanoli. Bring him close. Mitoch bnei Yisrael, from in the midst of the Jewish people, lachanoli. Like, their job is to serve me. Their job is to be the Kohen. Okay, now I want to move on.
That also shows you can go from the lowest level. Not that he was on the lowest
level. Right. So you want
to
be
a sin to the highest of being the Kohen Gadol.
Correct. I just want to be careful about how we speak about Aaron. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's still Aaron HaKohen. Like, his sin, his mistake, his error was grave. Was very, very grave. But nonetheless, he was still on the level to become the Kohen Gadol. Okay, let's go on a little bit. I'm going to read that last pasuk again. Okay? You should be asked. Pasuk Bet. Va'asita bigdei kodesh l'Aaron achicha. You shall make bigdei kodesh for Aaron your brother. L'chavod u'letif'aret. L'chavod means for honor and for tif'aret. What were the purpose? I'll just ask it in this way. What's the purpose of the bigdei kahuna? And so important, the Torah says, the Rambam writes, that if a Kohen tries to be misharet, serves in the Beit HaMikdash without the bigdei kahuna, Right? It's as if he's a zar. He's a stranger. What's the punishment for a zar who brings a korbanot?
Too much.
Right, death. Right? It's punishable by death. Okay? So therefore, the big tekahuna are an essential element of the service in the Beit HaMikdash. Why are these begadim so important? And you can go into each one. Everyone is a very meaningful, etc., etc.
Kind of a great equalizer, I feel like.
What's that?
The big tekahuna. I feel like they're kind of a great equalizer.
From all the kohanim.
Yeah. Other than the Kohen Gadol. I mean, that they're all the same.
Okay, so you're speaking.
They're all the same. They're all very simple. Like the simple.
They're simple?
White, the white.
They're wearing white.
Pants and that shirt. And uh-huh. It's pretty simple, well, pants and shirt.
And what were they made out of? What color? And then it was white, and then on top of that?
I don't remember.
I don't either. What was it made of?
I think
was there a tchelet in there somewhere?
No, they had a hat.
What? Well, yeah, there's tchelet, there's argaman. The apron that they wore was very, very colorful, very powerful. Wasn't just.
But the rest of it was very simple.
Uh huh.
So
it was a combination of both. But you're describing, essentially, what is Rina describing? When you say the clothing was there in order to become a great equalizer, we call that a uniform. Right? Why do people wear uniforms? They wear uniforms to identify with a certain group, right? And to identify with each other. That we're all on the same team. We all have and to a large degree, clothing does play that role. Clothing plays a role of associating us in a certain way. And if you think about it, you realize just how true it is. Okay? Why do I wear this yarmulke and not a different yarmulke? Is it conscious? Is it a conscious choice?
Yes.
Yes, it is. For me, it is. Why do you cover your hair this way and not a different way? Right? I mean, it's obvious. And you could walk around, like, if you're, I always find it funny, like, you know, any firm woman can identify another woman wearing a sheitel. In a heartbeat.
Only right. If you've worn a sheitel or you've been around people who wear sheitels.
Right.
The Israeli women can't do it. Yeah.
Really? They can't do it?
They just cannot,
But you could walk around Israel and look at how a woman covers her hair and know exactly what community she comes from. You can walk around Yam Binyamin and know who's Sarada Chaim and who's Sephardic. It's obvious. Why? Because we use clothing in this way. We use clothing as a manner of identifying ourselves, the way we do dress and the way we don't dress. And it doesn't make it more healthy or less healthy, it's a fact of life. It's the way that it is. But how then is clothing lichavod, to honor Hashem, ulitifaret? Right, what's the kavod and what's the tiferet? Anyone? Anyone want to guess? So let's look at some of the mafarshim. I think there's a lot of beauty here and a lot of depth. Okay, let me see if I can find it. Okay. So the Ramban says, if you look at the Ramban, first look at Sforno. Sforno says lichavod. Lichavod is lichavod ha'el yitbarach biyotam bigdei kodesh lavodato. Right? It's a kavod to Hashem to dress in a certain way. To have nice clothing for him to dress in a certain way. I mean, last reflects to what we said last night, right? My son came home, Simcha came home from his Erev Kita, and they didn't daven together. Why didn't they daven? The Ram said because they were all playing soccer, and they were all sweating. So he said, it's not mechubad to daven this way. And, we're it's interesting. We thought maybe it would be better if they had daven, because how many of the kids went home and daven? But he's teaching them a lesson. The lesson being that when you daven, you are dressed in a certain way. And especially in this country, like in America, it's much more pronounced. I don't know how it is in Brazil, but you don't come to shul just like so. Right? Here it's...
You don't go in your bermudas and...
Right.
Or sandals.
Right. I mean, in our yeshuv, it's less so. There still is an idea of dressing for Shabbat. Yeah. It's like a level down.
Even if you want to daven for the yama, do people daven for the yama?
Here in the... Shul, no, they don't in shorts. They won't.
Right.
If you're wearing shorts, that's one big ploy that a lot of people use. If they don't want to daven for the yama, they just come in shorts. So they don't have to... it's like nama chubat. Okay. So there's an idea of kavod Hashem in the way that you dress. And what's Tiferet, says this forno? Shiyah kohen moren nora al kol svivav. Shehem tamidav hachakukim alibo ktefav. The idea that the tiferet, the glory is for other people. How do people view the Kohen? I once went to give a shiur, and I was like after I had went running, so I put on my weekdayer clothes. Here. And Rina looks at me and goes, you're going to wear that to the shiur? And I said, yeah, I did. I don't know. But her point was, how do people relate to you? to be brutally honest, you relate to me and the things that I'm teaching you much differently than if I was here sitting in shorts and a t-shirt. It's hard to imagine. You're just having a hard time. You know, I do wear shorts and a t-shirt every now and then. No? And I dare say, this is going to be something, think about honestly, think about very interestingly. If I wore shorts and a t-shirt 4 weeks in a row, many of you would stop coming. Why? Isn't the same words? Aren't we saying the same thing? Right? But, what is it? Try to articulate it. I'm not dressed. That's not, no, but I think I'm right. Aren't I right? I am right, right? You wouldn't consciously. You wouldn't be like, oh, he's wearing shorts and t-shirt, I'm not going to come. You would start feeling less respect-driven to come. 100%. So, what? You don't think so?
If you started out one way and then you changed, you know, then it would...
If I started out in shorts and a t-shirt, I don't know if anybody would come. Nobody would come. It's the same Torah. It's the same words. I'm the same words. The guy sitting on the tape, you guys have no idea what I'm wearing right now. You have no idea. Tank top, shorts. It's not. You have no idea. Correct?
No, but there's a certain assumption.
There's a certain assumption. It always is interesting to, like, you wonder how, when a person gives a shiur or you hear something on recording, how do you envision that person? Like, if you never saw that person, how do you, what are they dressed like? What are they wearing? How do you envision them? And it's really important. Yeah.
I see your point, but also, like, I think, like, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt of seeing beyond that. Like, for instance, well, it's interesting because Jonathan worked for the same company.
Of course, the pearls of wisdom emanating from my mouth are so valuable that they can overcome shorts and a t-shirt.
So now he works for the same company, but, like, you know, it's much more casual. Like, sometimes I'm like, are you wearing that shirt? And I'm dressed up, you know? So there is something to how you present.
Who told me this week? Someone told me this week. That in a sales company, Rina, did you tell me this?
I told you.
In a sales company that they worked at, they instituted a policy that the workers who were doing telemarketing had to come dressed business attire.
No, they were calling from home.
Yeah, but they were working from home. If you're going to do an interview over the phone from home, you should dress up as if you were going.
And what were the results, Rina?
Significantly.
They said that their results of sales, were selling from home, were significantly greater when they dressed up. Oh, that was a fly lady thing. You were talking about the fly lady thing.
So that's the soda fly lady. When you wake up in the morning, you get dressed in your real clothes down to your
tie shoes, lace-up shoes. Why?
But it makes you feel, it influences the way you feel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think the way you dress a lot of times influences the way you feel. Mm-hmm. If I dress up, I feel more confident. Or like, I think a lot of people feel like that. Like,
right. But not just confident in your... What's that?
Clothes.
You always wear your Sunday clothes.
Here in Israel,
yeah. What, we used to be your Sunday clothes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't think you can equate cultures because your Sunday clothes are Israeli normal clothes.
Okay, no,
you know what I'm saying?
Okay,
right. And it is hard for... I never had trouble dumping the tie. You know, the tie was very easy to get rid of. I don't. But the jacket is
but
a little...
But it does influence the way you... When you dress and the way... Your attitude that day... If you dress up, you feel more confident, you feel more... So you get into the spirit of the thing, of what you have to do. If you just lie in short, if you just not in shorts and a t-shirt and answering the phone...
Right.
You're much more relaxed, you're much more... You don't take it as seriously.
Correct.
As if you're...
Correct. The real interesting question is, and this is a truism about our psychology, and I think that's the depth of the... Of the Big Day Kahuna. On the one hand, it speaks a truism about giving kavod to Hashem that you have this beautiful clothing. But on the other hand, how does it affect us? Like, and not only how did it affect the Kohanim who were serving, but in addition, the people who came to the Beit Hamikdash. Right, they couldn't come and have the Kohen do the service in a basketball uniform. Because that wasn't what they were expecting. They were expecting someone to be dressed in a certain way. You know, and it is interesting, like, even, it's interesting to me, even in the society in which we live, you know, like, if you see the Rabbanim, like, you know, there's certain Rabbanim in the community who are very Tzioni, Rav Luz and Rav Amsalem, they wear these long black frocks. Why do they wear those black frocks? Because they are Rabbanim. And for whatever reason, that in our society has been associated with Rabbanim. And they feel the need and the necessity of maintaining that level and that stature, as well they should. You know what I'm saying? So it's a very interesting give and take. They dress a certain way because they have expectations of themselves, and our view of them is equal to that expectation because of the way they dress. You know, and one could say that when I dump my tie and I go to shul and I'm not wearing a jacket on Shabbat, like I'll say this, I guess, I don't know, honestly, confessioningly, you know, whatever the word is. Like, for me, it's hard here. I don't know what I am. You know what I'm saying? I teach to some people, I give shiurim, but I'm also a member of a regular Joe and other, like, it's confusing. And that manifests itself in, like, you know, do you wear the jacket? Don't you wear the jacket? And how people view you in that way. This is a very complicated thing, even something as simple as that. Yeah, Arlene, you want to say something? No? Okay.
I was actually thinking about this idea in relation to our shiur last week, but when we spoke about simplicity in that, because the Mishkan itself was all very fancy.
Yeah.
So,
how these clothing, fine linen, I think. Linen, have you ever, does anybody here own a linen anything?
Yeah,
it's terrible. What?
Terrible?
Yes, correct. Fine linen, white. All white linen. What's flying around the Mishkan at all times? Oh, right. Every day new. It always had to be new. Can you imagine trying to wash the blood out of those things? Forget it, right? Okay, every day new, and it's linen, white, and colorful. Now remember, how did they get colored dyes? How did they get dyes? They either made it from plants or they made it from animal products. Dyes were known to be extremely expensive. You have to take yourself back. What did all clothes look like? They started out white and then they turned brown. Some shade of brown or green. Right? There was no such thing as, and even with the laundry, there was no such thing as colorful clothing for normal people. You know, you maybe did. The idea of the kanaf ptil techelet, the techelet on, was beyond unusual, because the idea that every Jew had to have this techelet, that it stuck out. Today, the techelet, what's the difference? I got a blue shirt, you have a very colorful, top, a purple sweater. That purple sweater, that was like royalty. Who could afford such a thing? With synthetic things, it doesn't cost us anything. But the idea that you would go to the Beit HaMikdash and these people would be dressed in these spotless, beautiful, pressed, shiny, spanking new clothing. It was unbelievable. That in and of itself was a powerful experience. Yeah. Yeah, meaning that
like
the clothing.
They dress up and then someone might spend their time thinking like about that and not.
Well, correct. The idea of the clothing.
Instinctually trust the person because of the way they dress and how they look.
Right. The idea of the clothing was there in order to instill a certain sense of trust and value in the people too. Okay, we're going to stop. I'm out of time. Okay, I'm going to read. This is Nechama has. She goes on this to a large degree. I recommend reading the rest of her essay. It's Tetzaveh number 2. She quotes Benno Jacob. Benno Jacob was a biblical commentator who worked very hard to try to refute the documentary hypothesis. He has a very, very thick book on Shemot. So she quotes him a lot on Shemot. So he writes the following. Clothing is not merely a protection against cold or ornamentative. It constitutes the primary and necessary distinguishing mark of human society. It is the moral consciousness of man. It serves to set him higher than the beast. The status and glory of man are reflected in the character of his attire. Just to be clothed already lends dignity to man. Right? We don't even take that for granted. The animals, they don't wear clothing. The idea that we wear clothing is in and of itself a chidush. The priests were given special garments for splendor and for beauty. The highest status that a mortal can attain is that of a high priest and his entry into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. He is then clothed in white as a symbol of purity and light. Then he may be compared to the man clothed in linen, i.e. the angel of the Lord. So he goes on to this idea of God gave Adam and Eve garments and clothing, indicates that clothing is not just a social convention, but an extension of the work of creation, a kind of second skin given to man, a nobler material encasement. And I think there's an idea, you know, like, especially for women who have daughters. You know what I'm saying? For boys, it's true, but for girls, it's even more true. We hakam about tzniut. Right? You know what I'm saying? And especially as your daughters will get older, we hakam about tzniut. And it becomes a broken record. And it's hard to yell about tzniut, especially in the context of a society that pushes sexuality so hard. And I think one of the things that we can do is to talk from a different perspective, not about it has to be this, it has to be that, but what does the clothing that we wear say about us? Why do I want to wear this piece of clothing? Right? Who am I trying to identify with? Why am I letting this aspect of society tell me what it is I'm supposed to look like and who I'm supposed to identify with? Like, why do I want to wear that piece of clothing? And I think it, like, you know, obviously you're always going to fight about it. It's going to be a fight. But from that perspective, it's, what's that?
I can't complain.
You can't complain, Baruch Hashem. But from that perspective, it's more of an empowering question as opposed to a fight. You know what I'm saying? Even though you might lose the fight for now, you're planting seeds in our children about them asking themselves, like, yeah, I don't necessarily want to dress like my parents per se because I'm going to rebel against whatever they dress like. But if I do want to dress in some other way, if I'm going to pick a uniform, whose uniform am I going to pick? Am I going to pick Madison Avenue? Am I going to pick, you know, Torah Chaim? I'm going to rebel against my parents, but which direction, which uniform do I want to wear? And what do those clothing say about me? And when we speak about the clothing in that way, it can be a very powerful conversation, not just for ourselves, but for the family. All right, we'll stop.